Hello and welcome to The Stushy, the Scottish politics podcast from DC Thompson, which helps you be better briefed. I'm Alistair Clark, politics reporter for The Courier, filling in for your usual host, Andy Philp. Parliament is still in recess with MSPs due to return to Holyrood next week, but as we know, politics continues on. This week, my colleague Justin Bowie spoke with Ros Fyre, General Secretary of the Scottish Trade Union Congress, ahead of their annual Congress in Dundee next week. With Labour riding high in the polls, they discuss what a potential Keir Starmer government would mean for industrial relations, as well as the future of oil and gas jobs. He started off by asking Ros what the key moments will be at conference.
Well, we're really pleased to be returning to Dundee once again for our Congress. You're absolutely right, it's a natural home for the STUC to hold its Congress. Dundee's got a proud history, working class history and history of workers joining together in struggle, right back to the jute workers and beyond. And so it's always a pleasure to come to Dundee. We are not short of challenges to face as, you know, a working class movement right now. We are facing a Tory government at UK level that wants to take away our right to strike. We have come through the pandemic and then been hit with one of the worst cost of living crises that, you know, workers have faced in generations. In real terms, we're talking about the biggest drop in living standards since records began. We have lots to do to meet the big challenges ahead in terms of moving and transitioning in a just manner towards a green economy. There is a need for huge funding of our public services, which are frankly on their knees. So we have many challenges ahead, but we also have a lot of solutions and a lot of ideas. And really, it's about leading the way for the Politicians' Congress for me next week. It's about the trade union movement and working people coming together and telling the politicians what we want to see going forward and how they can redistribute wealth in our economy in favour of working class people in their communities.
It's somewhat gloomy picture there in some respects, but at the same time, clearly, you know, a sense of, you know, you guys have ideas, you've got things you want to do, you know where you want to push politicians. Is there any optimism at all ahead of the next general election? It looks like the Conservatives will be ousted from power after 14 years. That is something that trade unions will obviously welcome. It looks like a Labour government is going to replace them. So is there optimism among the trade union movement at the moment?
Well, I think there's optimism on two counts. One of the most optimistic things that I've seen over the past 2 years is the fact that so many workers are getting together in their trade union and taking action to change things. When the politicians that we've got at the moment haven't done well enough for them, then workers have taken the matter into their own hands. We've seen over the last year over 450 strikes across Scotland, and that's been 165,000 plus workers that have been involved in those actions. And, you know, in the vast majority of cases, those industrial actions have worked. Over £4 billion was won over the last 2 years through collective bargaining by trade unions in terms of pay rises for workers in Scotland. But over £3 billion of that wouldn't have been delivered by employers and by politicians without the workers coming together and voting to take strike action. So I think we've got a real hope there that workers are beginning to understand that when they come together and make demands, they can change things. Obviously, one of the biggest things we have to change going forward is getting rid of this rotten Tory government. Every single day that they stay in power at a UK level is another day when communities are being damaged, and in some cases, it's irreparable damage is being done. We've seen the pendulum swing far too far against workers' rights. We've seen the profit margins for big business and companies go through the roof. You know, that gap between the richest and the poorest has continued to grow. And we've seen profits getting sucked out of our public sector through the delivery of essential services. So we really need to get rid of the Tory government. And I think one of the things that I'm really optimistic about are the pledges that we're seeing from Labour telling us that if they form the next UK government, they will in the first 100 days bring in a new deal for workers. And that means a ban on 0 hours contracts. It means day one employment rights. It means work to spread fair pay agreements and collective bargaining across our economy. And most importantly, it means a repeal of the Tory anti-strike laws, which are really, really, you know, important for working people. This government at UK level at the moment that we've got has literally been trying to you know, enslave workers by removing their right to strike and remove our right to protest and a whole range of different things, which we really cannot allow to happen.
You mentioned some hope there in regards to what a Labour government will do. What is the attitude as the Congress meets towards Sir Keir Starmer at the moment? As you say, you want a Labour government to replace the current Tory government, but Sir Keir Starmer has U-turned on some major pledges. The two-child benefit cap was particularly controversial last year. Are you confident that he'll listen to trade unions, or are there some concerns that you may run into altogether different problems once Labour are in power?
I think that most trade unionists that you'll come across, Justin, have a healthy dose of scepticism when it comes to any political party or political leader. And we understand all too well that no matter what colour of flag the party happens to be flying, we need to keep the pressure up on the politicians and make it abundantly clear to them what they're going to have to do if they want to succeed at the ballot box. And that is about raising awareness amongst our members and keeping the pressure on. We're under no illusions that big business know it's likely that we're about to get a Labour government, and they will be working hard and lobbying hard to influence that Labour government to water down, you know, any legislation that may be in favour of workers. But we remain resolute. We've had promises made to us, and we intend to hold the politicians' feet to the fire on those promises, keep that pressure up all the way to the election.
Moving to Holyrood, First Minister Hamza Yousaf has often boasted about his record when it comes to workers' rights. He has taken pride in managing to avoid NHS strikes, which happened down south. Is it fair for him to tout that record, or is Holyrood sometimes just as bad as Westminster when it comes to workers' rights and when it comes to pay deals?
Well, I think the main difference between the UK government and the Scottish government is that at least the Scottish government will sit down in a room and negotiate with us. They do see trade unions and workers' representatives as important and key social partners in our economy, and that is a positive thing to be welcomed. They have, you know, a fair work agenda and a fair work minister. One of their key goals is to promote collective bargaining and grow it across Scotland, because they understand that that is one of the key ways to drive money into workers' pockets and create a fairer and a well-being economy. However, all that said, there's a difference between talking the talk and walking the walk, and we need to see the Scottish Government do more walking the walk. The fact that we've had to see so many workers right across our public sector taking strike action in the first place is a scandal. They shouldn't have had to take strike action to get that extra £3 billion on the table over the past 2 years. That should have been made available, it should have been found, and it should have been realistically budgeted for in the first place. And, you know, if we want to really talk about a fairer economy, you can't talk about, you know, funding public services on the one hand and lowering taxes on the other hand. So, you know, things like the council tax freeze, etc., are you know, not realistic. We can't have American-style taxes and Norwegian-style public services. So I think politicians have to be a bit more honest with the public. And, you know, if we want a real well-being economy and we want to rebalance our economy in favour of those on lower incomes, then that takes change. It takes more progressive taxation. It means making difficult decisions. And it also means making sure that you budget to pay workers properly in the first place, so that we don't need to see strike action taking place. So, you know, it's great that we avoided strike action in Scotland's NHS. It's very regrettable that we've seen year after year of action having to take place, for example, in local government and a whole range of other areas where we've seen industrial action, including the Scottish Government's own doorstep for them as an employer.
One area where the Scottish Government's approach to workers has come under scrutiny is the energy sector. There's obviously been major concerns over the future of oil and gas and whether renewables jobs will be enough to compensate for the decline of the sector. And that's obviously come at the same time as plans to close Grangemouth as well, a plant where plenty of workers in Fife are employed. Is the Scottish Government doing enough to protect jobs in the energy sector, or are they trying to have it both ways here, where they want to be seen as backing the oil and gas sector while still winding it down at the same time?
Well, again, there is a lot of the right talk happening, but when you look at the outcomes and the action, we are left in a very, very deep level of concern about about jobs in Scotland in the energy sector. And, you know, this is a big issue for people who live in Dundee. We know that that's, you know, particularly impacted by jobs in the energy sector. But we're looking at the UK renewables on energy, and we're looking at turnover having gone up by about $4 billion in terms of the investors. And jobs in Scotland have actually gone down by about 4,000 at the same time. So, you know, there's a lot of investment going on, but at the moment it seems to be benefiting business, and we're not seeing the jobs on the ground in Scotland. Scotland's actually turning into a poor relation of the UK at the moment when we start to look at job growth. So for us, results on the ground are about rebuilding our manufacturing supply chain for the renewable industries. They're about making sure that we have proper pathways for people to update their skill sets and move from oil and gas into renewable energy. But for that to happen, the jobs have to be there, and they have to be high quality, unionised, you know, well-paid jobs that are equivalent to the jobs that people are working in the oil and gas industry at the moment. So there is a mountain to climb in terms of getting joined up thinking on this. Meanwhile, we have, you know, the need for much more workers coming into that sector to be trained and upskilled to come into that sector. If we're going to, you know, do things like green retrofit our housing and all that sort of thing, we're going to need a lot of people to be upskilled. And our FE sector is in absolute crisis and on its knees. So there needs to be a lot more joined up thinking and planning and decisions made about where the Scottish Government's going to put its investment. I think there's far too much dependency on private sector investment rather than seriously looking at how we can take our energy systems back into public ownership and actually plan and invest for what people need rather than where can the best profits be made.
When it comes to the energy sector, the SNP or Scottish Government often use this phrase, just transition, the idea of fairly moving away from oil and gas towards renewables. But from what you say there, there's a lot of concern that the jobs that replace oil and gas jobs aren't going to necessarily be as high quality as you say. And is there a risk that this just transition idea becomes a bit of an empty slogan as opposed to an actual concrete plan?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just transition, that phrase was born out of the trade union movement in America, and it was people working, you know, it was workers and communities who were affected by workers in the energy industry coming together and saying, we deserve better. You know, we deserve better for our workforces, and we deserve better for the communities that are affected by, you know, the non-clean energy industries. And they set out a vision and a way of working that would ensure that workers' voices are at the heart of that transition. And actually, my biggest message to government is, if you want to know what a just transition in reality looks like, listen to the workers who work in that industry. You know, our members and unions like Unite, GMB, Prospect and others have a very clear understanding of where investment is needed, what needs to happen to allow them to update their skills to be marketable. And, you know, if we want jobs to be high quality, we need to unionise them. We've seen too many examples of investors being allowed to, with, you know, huge government support and subsidy, being allowed to invest in the UK but not recognise trade unions, when actually across the rest of the world they do work with trade unions and recognise them, perhaps in their home countries, for example. So, you know, if the Scottish Government's serious about being a fair work world leader, then it needs to ensure that when investment is being made and it's supporting that investment with match funding or grants or whatever, that it's actually making sure that we can unionise jobs and make sure they're high quality, have good paying conditions, are secure and have worker voice and health and safety at their heart.
You talk about taking the energy sector more into public ownership again and moving away from a dependence on the private sector to the degree we have now. So Keir Starmer has obviously pledged to launch a British energy company, GB Energy, which would be based in Scotland. But a couple of months ago, there was a sense of disappointment when he abandoned a green jobs pledge. At the same time, he pledged to extend oil and gas windfall tax. What were the thoughts of trade unions to him, you turning on that pledge in terms of green jobs?
Well, I think it's disappointing that we couldn't see the pledge upheld. It's so important that we multiply the investment that's going to come from the UK government. And this is an area that, you know, Scottish government alone cannot put the sort of investment that's required into, you know, updating our grid to take on the renewables we've already got and, you know, moving that further. There needs to be serious, serious investment, and that needs to be done through big government. And so it was very regrettable to see that pledge removed. And I think, you know, we've expressed that disappointment to Labour, but the dialogue continues, and, you know, you have to keep pushing and keep lobbying our politicians to set their priorities in the right way. There is absolutely no doubt that we, you know, it's one of the biggest existential crises facing the human race is how do we move and transition to a green economy in a way that isn't going to end up with, you know, communities for 30 years getting thrown in the scrap heap, like we saw in the 1980s when there was huge transition in our economy. We need to learn those lessons and move forward. So for me, the best thing I want to see is trade unions and whoever is in government at UK and at Scottish level sitting down and having full and frank discussions about what is required, where is it required, and a realistic conversation about how much investment's required. And ultimately, we need to start taxing the rich and taxing big business to invest in those things. And the other thing is, you know, if we do have a serious conversation about taking energy, transport, care, other essential services fully back into public sector ownership, what we're doing is stopping the profits being sucked out and offshored by private companies, which is exactly what's happening in the delivery of our essential services at the moment. That would save government money long term. Big money. So I think, you know, we really need to have a fundamental look at how we rebalance our economy, because the current system is broken. Our energy market is broken, and that's why we've seen deepest cost of living crisis in generations.
Moving on to a slightly different topic, we reported at the start of the year that Dundee council chiefs had been accused of refusing to pay hundreds of women who had lodged equal pay claims against them. The GMB union has obviously been quite outspoken about this. But is it realistic to expect the council to pay women this money when we see how stretched public finances are at the moment?
Well, this is a really relevant issue. We've actually seen strike action taking this place this week across other parts of Scotland exactly on that issue of equal pay. We saw women in Glasgow, after taking action back in 2018, you know, win the equal pay that they were owed. And let's be really clear about this. This is about women's work, really essential women's work, that's been undervalued for decades. These women legally are owed money. That's their pay that they have been denied. So there can be no ambiguity about the fact that, you know, Glasgow was just the tip of the iceberg. There are still massive equal pay issues right across local government, across Scotland. And those women deserve and are owed that backdated money and deserve their work to be valued equivalent to other roles and how they've been valued within those local authorities. So you're absolutely right. We're in a time of deep financial crisis. But the STUC, you know, put at the budget last year a package of tax reforms that would have enabled them to raise an additional £3.7 billion that they could have invested in public services. So there are ways that the Scottish Government could choose to tax wealth and assets properly and help to rebalance our economy. That starts with having a proper property and land revaluation. And we haven't seen a revaluation of property and land in Scotland since back in the 1990s. It's been over 30 years since we've had a revaluation. So there is much work that needs to be done if we're going to, you know, have a proper progressive taxation that actually allows us then to spend the money that needs to be spent on our public services. But, you know, I 100% support every single woman that's involved in an equal pay claim. And I think it's inexcusable for Scottish Government to just allow this problem to continue. They're really going to have to get real about what they need to do in equal pay. It's yet another issue. And it shouldn't involve us having to sell off our assets or blame the women themselves for asking for what they're entitled to. They absolutely deserve every single penny Kenny.
And staying on the topic of workers' rights in Dundee, we reported that five Dundee council electricians were suspended earlier this year over accusations of being work shy and allegations of poor time management. I'm aware trade unions have often been opposed to workers being routinely tracked while they're on the clock. While you might not be able to comment on the specifics of this particular case, I was wondering if you had any wider thoughts on that, or on that topic of workers being tracked and that relationship with employers in that regard.
Well, I think at the end of the day, what trade unions would prefer to see is, you know, good people management, and, you know, people absolutely, you know, can and should, their output should be monitored at work, but there are lines that should not be crossed. And because of technology nowadays, you know, we are seeing levels of monitoring of employees that are causing real mental health issues. And, you know, if we look back to the pandemic and people working from home, etc., you know, really quite intrusive levels of monitoring of workers that, you know, impinges on their private life as well as their time at work. And I think it's about having that dialogue where, you know, between workers and those who manage the workers, a reasonable and, you know, amount of monitoring can take place. But that monitoring should be on, you know, what are the outcomes that we're looking to see? When you're every minute or how long you take, and I've seen it in workplaces where people, you know, employers are counting by the minute how long it takes people to go to the toilet and things like that. And, you know, that sort of level of monitoring, I would suggest, is bad for productivity, bad for morale, and bad for workers' mental health long term. So there needs to be a balance there, and that's exactly why collective bargaining is so important, and for workers and their unions to be able to sit down with management and come up with reasonable ways of monitoring and managing people's output.
Obviously, just as a final question, Hamza Yousaf will be along at your Congress next week in Dundee. If you had one message to him before he comes to that, what would it be? If you had one message for the First Minister, what would you say?
I think my message to all politicians, including the First Minister, is it's time to pick a side. If you really are on the side of working people, then it needs to be proven through action and not just talk and intent. And that would go for Keir Starmer, for Anas Sarwar, for Hamza Yousaf, for any key politician in a decision-making role that we want to work with going forward.
Thanks to Rose Foyer for joining us, and I hope you found that interesting. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week for more. In the meantime, pick up a paper or log on to The Courier, Press and Journal, Sunday Post, and any of our other news brands so you can be better briefed.